Denmark, making our way through the Pacific Division as part of our trade deadline preview. Introduce ourselves. Ezra Ginsberg is joining me in studio with David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, Tim Debenham, and Michael Remus, one behind the glass, one, of course, in studio. I'm Richard Pollock, filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel. And this segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest-growing, and most diverse accounting body in Manitoba. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org or 204-477-1256. The CGA Association of Manitoba. We see more than numbers.
Pacific Division.
You hear the Danny California music, and let's start within California, as there's three teams in this division. With the LA Kings, the defending Stanley Cup champions, their pending UFAs are Dustin Penner, Brad Richardson, and the underrated Rob Scuderi. Their pending RFAs, Kyle Clifford, Voinov, Martinez, who are going to, you know, command certainly more money than they're making now, and then the recently acquired Keaton Ellerbe and the, you know, Jonathan Bernier in the on the back end there. They've given so much money to Jonathan Quick, you wonder what they'll do with Bernier, but that's a story I think they'll probably be addressing in the offseason. In terms of trade candidates off the active roster, I don't know if there's going to be anybody. You know, Mac Green is now hurt. He's been hurt for the majority of the year. They've pushed his timeline back a little bit. Willie Mitchell's apparently out for the year, so they're certainly young on defense. They have cap room to make a move. So to me, this team needs veteran defensemen to solidify the back end. Who do you see as them trying to address that with?
A guy that comes up again is Robin Regier. And as far as the LA Kings are concerned, you know, there were rumors that they might be in the Jerome McGinley sweepstakes. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that they weren't. They probably were. But I didn't really think that was necessary. I mean, they've solidified their top six. Jeff Carter is scoring like the Jeff Carter of 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the LA Kings, really, what they need is, a veteran presence on defense. And Keaton Ellerbe was a nice pickup from the Florida Panthers. They didn't have to give up a lot. Slava Voyanov, I really like. He's turned into a very dependable top four defenseman. He's physical. He can add some offense when he needs to. Drew Doughty is one of the best up-and-coming defensemen. We all know that. But that's what you're looking at, Richie. You're looking at a guy like Robin Regier.
But let's tie it together, Ez.
Yep.
Robin Regier played for who in Calgary?
That's a good point. Daryl Sutter. So there is the connection there. That's what they have to do, though. I mean, Jonathan Bernier, I'll say this right now, I don't think he's not getting moved. The problem with, you know, everyone, it's a sexy idea to think that Jonathan Bernier is going to get moved to a team and they're going to pick up a forward. But the problem is, in this day and age, you want two good goalies. And Jonathan Quick actually hasn't been phenomenal this year, and Bernier's been able to go in there and give them some good backup goaltending. So I don't think that Bernier is going to be the big guy that gets moved. I think you're going to look at maybe giving up a prospect or a draft pick to get a veteran defenseman. Buffalo Sabres, whether it's, you know, the Florida Panthers that might want a deal, I don't think they're going to go after Brian Campbell.
I wouldn't
be surprised if they did, but I think those are the types of guys that they're going to go after if they do go after anybody.
The Anaheim Ducks, of course, have, you know, just down the road from the LA Kings, their pending UFAs are guys like Timo Solani and Saku Koivu, who both have no movement clauses and are both imperative to their chance of making a run here this year, so they're not going anywhere. Tony Ludman and then Ben Lovejoy on the back end are both pending UFAs. Kyle Palmieri and Matt Bolesky are pending RFA, so really nothing in the way of guys who they kind of need to move. I don't necessarily think they're going to move anybody off the active roster, so the question is, you know, are they going to move some prospects? Maybe some defensemen they could move, but likely not. They have a lot of cap room. To me, they still need probably another top six winger if they could add that in, because they've been playing Ryan with those Perry and Getzlaff, of course. And, you know, Solani and Koivu both had pretty solid years, but Solani's more of a power play guy than anything. And I think they could use some speed on the back end in the way of a smooth skating defenseman. Dave, do you see them sticking with exactly what they've got, or probably adding a piece or more heading down the stretch?
Well, GM Bob Murray has been active signing his players right now, so now that he's got that out of the way, and he's insisted in interviews that he won't have to get rid of Bobby Ryan's contract to meet next year's CapGeek numbers by CapGeek. It'll be interesting to see how he does that, but They've been a bit anemic lately. They, you know, they're just 5-4-1 in their last 10. However, they swept the season series with the Blackhawks with their win last night.
Big win.
So, you know, what will the Anaheim Ducks do? I could see them standing pat. You know, I mean, they do need it. But, again, how much room do they have to make a move? I don't know. I think he would. They'll stay pat.
Dave, you know, it's funny. Or maybe it's not so funny. But as far as the Anaheim Ducks go, right now, what do they need to do? I mean, the way they're playing now, they've got two good goalies. Victor Foss has come out of nowhere, but Jonas Hiller is getting the majority of the starts. He played yesterday versus Chicago. They beat them. Anaheim Ducks right now are by far one of the top teams in the West. What do they need to do? Well, Sheldon Souré and Brian Allen, they've done a nice job. Sheldon Souré got the winning goal last night. He's brought some size, some leadership. But to me, Richie, what, you know, you forget when the Ducks won the Stanley Cup playoffs, you know, in 2007. They had Chris Pronger and Scott Niedermeyer. Sheldon Souré and Cam Fowler, no offense to them, aren't Scott Niedermeyer and Chris Pronger. They could still probably use a puck-moving defenseman if they can get him, and they would probably move someone. But I also think that going into the playoffs when you've got, you know, a lot of rookies, we talked about this on the NHL Midweek Show, you've got a lot of rookies, Kyle Palmieri, Emerson Edom, those guys, you still might want to add a winger. A guy like Drew Stoudt comes to mind.
Depending on what they'd have to give up, of course, to get him. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 at Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day. We are breaking down the Pacific Division as part of our trade deadline preview. And we are now coming up to the third team in California, and that's the San Jose Sharks, guys. Pending UFAs, Ryan Kloh, who has a no-trade clause, Michael Hanzus, who has a no-movement clause, and then Scotty Gomez and Grice on the back in between the pipes. TJ Gagliardi, James Shepard, and Jason Demers are all pending RFAs. Trade candidates you'll hear a lot about are Marty Havlat, he has a no-movement clause, and Dan Boyle, who has a no-trade clause. Don't have a ton of cap room, but have enough to make a move. Probably could use some, you know, defenseman or two to fill out the blue line, and then some depth on the bat and on forward. You know, their top guys are their top guys, and I think that's the problem. That's what I want to ask you guys. They're kind of getting older, and so what's the direction of this squad? If they start selling some assets, they're not going to be good enough, and then they're kind of done. And then what happens for the future? Because they're only really good young players, or Pat Pavelski and Couture. To me, they kind of have to, if they're going to stick with this core, they have to make a move to at least try to give themselves a shot at doing something. And to me, maybe the question is, do you try for a top-end goaltender like a Ryan Miller? Just in theory, you try for a Ryan Miller to say, hey, maybe we'll just ride it out. We've never really had a top-end goaltender. Nabokov always buckled in the playoffs. Maybe somebody like that is what we need to make a run with this aging squad.
See, the problem with that, though, is, and I was thinking about that, you know, as I was prepping for our trade deadline show, and the thing is, Antti Niemi's been very good this year.
Yeah.
Look at his numbers, and he's been good. But the thing is, can he steal a series? Well, the answer to that is probably a maybe, if not a no. And he won the Stanley Cup with the Chicago Blackhawks, but with the defense in front of him, Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook and Brian Campbell and all those guys, Dave, he didn't need to steal a series, and he played well. We got to give him credit for that, but he wasn't a top goaltender.
Well, and
you make a good point though about the San Jose Sharks,
but the problem is, as you just mentioned, and we talk about Ryan Miller probably being a guy to make a run, because I think he can make a sustained run.
He can't steal a series,
but you mentioned it. You know, you're looking at Niemi with the fifth best save percentage in the league. So again, their hands are kind of tied, aren't they?
The Sharks, I think, if they do make a move, what I would see them doing is adding. I mentioned this on the NHL Midweek Show. You trade Dan Boyle right there, your defense crumbles. Dan Boyle is one of the top defensemen in the NHL. I don't see how you move him. There was the Boyle for Gabrick rumors. And the thing is, do they need Gabrick? I mean, he's struggled at times in New York. Do they need another guy that's possibly going to struggle in the playoffs like Havlat has? So I look at the Sharks and I say, okay, well, add a veteran guy, or add a guy that can solidify your six. Add a guy like a Fleischmann or a Kopecky that can add you scoring if they're available. Not make a big move, because right now they're in seventh. And, you know, they've got guys that have been there. It's going to come down to those horses again, Thornton, Marlowe, Pavelski, all these guys, and to see if they can maybe upset a team like the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round.
And you trade Dan Boyle, you already traded Douglas Murray, and then you're saying, well, our back end is waving a red flag, aren't they not?
Yep.
I mean, that seems to be a huge issue. Phoenix Coyotes, Dave, they have a ton of pending UFAs: Steve Sullivan, Matthew Lombardi, Rafi Torres, Boyd Gordon, Kyle Chipchura, and of course our goaltenders, Mike Smith and Jason LaBarbera. The pending RFAs are Lori Korpikoski and Mikhail Bodker. Trade candidates, and you're going to hear a lot about, I think, is Keith Yandle's, I think, the big one. They have a ton of cap space, and of course, as Brad Trey Living, the assistant GM in Phoenix, has told us on NHL Midweek, they have a strict budget to abide by. And the NHL, of course, and Bill Daly is going to be enforcing that. So there's no flexibility there. I think they need scoring up front more than anything. But yet, they're kind of a team. Who knows what's happening? There's a report that they could be for sale. What does Don Maloney do here, Dave?
You know what? Don Maloney deserves some sort of award for what he goes through on a day-to-day basis with all the restrictions that are placed upon him that the 29 other GMs aren't dealing with. So, you know, what is he going to do? I mean, his team is currently out of it. They have 33 points. But again, they're not that far out. They're only they're only 3 points back. Yeah. You know, they went to the finals, the Western Conference Finals last year. So it's hard to see what are you going to do. You know, you've had a lot of injuries in Phoenix. But, you know, I mean, I with the present group, can you have a sustained run?
But they're always kind of year to year, right? So it's a difficult question to ask. The final team in the Pacific Division is the Dallas Stars. They're pending UFAs Jaromir Jagr, Derek Roy, Eric Nystrom. Eric Nystrom, actually, who I really like. I think he'd be a nice fit for the Winnipeg Jets on the, you know, fourth line. Can hit, can forecheck, really good skater. Thomas Vinecourt is their only really pending RFA, trade candidates. I think Dallas would be willing to do anything, really. Eric Cole, who I know they acquired, but he has a no-trade clause. Vernon Fiddler, I think, would be a nice fit for a veteran on the cup-contending squad. And then on the back end, Goligoski, Robida, and Daly. I think any of those guys could possibly be moved in the right deal. Of course, all three of them have no-trade clauses. Robida would be an interesting guy because he's affordable, he's a veteran, he can do a lot of things for a pretty cheap price. They have cap room. I think they'd like to solidify the middle. Cody Eakin obviously is a guy who's played really well for them, depending on what they want to do with him in the future, but they still like some young talent up front, and then their back end still needs some work, of course. Brendan Dillon's been a nice addition. Kind of a surprise for them, Jamie Oleksiak, and of course the addition of Joe Morrow from Pittsburgh, but even more defensemen through the pipeline wouldn't hurt them. Do you guys see Jagr and Roy? I'll give Ezzy Jagr and I'll give David Roy.
Well, Jagr is such a tough one because they brought him in to give them scoring, and they brought him in to sell tickets. They've had trouble filling the seats there in Dallas, and it's funny, now we're talking about maybe selling him for someone who wants to rent a player. He's on a one-year deal. Jaromir Jagr, I don't see them trading him. They need him right now. They're only a couple points out of a playoff spot right now. And, you know, Derek Roy to me is going to be appealing.
Hey, you're stepping on Dave's toes here.
That's okay. I can take Jagr.
Yeah. You take Jagr. You take Derek Roy.
Derek Roy, do you think he goes?
Well, you know, as you've said, I think the Canucks would love to get him. And so what does Dallas do? I mean, again, another similar position where a team is not that far out. But what are they going to do? Are you going to rebuild for the future and kind of just get rid of these guys? You know, I could see them getting rid of Roy. Yeah,
another team to mention, too, Dave, I know I'm stepping on your toe. I might be stepping on your back right
now. His foot's broken right now.
Another team that might want him is Ottawa. There's the connection there with Derek Roy.
Final thing to point out, you know, Dallas could eat some of that salary in sending him to a team like Vancouver to make a deal happen. We have gone through every single team in the National Hockey League, division by division, as we say, team by team, and we're going to delve into the Western Conference. What's going to happen with all the teams we just mentioned? What does Craig Button think? He's been, of course, a GM, a director of player personnel. He's been a scout. He's done it all, and he's going to join us after the break. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Richard Pollock filling the host chair for Drew Mandel. Joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuka of LegalCurve.com, Tim Debenham, and Michael Remus. We got a whole crew here.
We got something.
Yeah, we got something, all right.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
So far this hour, we've broke down the Western Conference and kind of gone team by team, looking at everybody's needs and what they could possibly look to acquire. We're going to break down the Western Conference with Craig Button of TSN. Craig, how are you this morning?
I am very well. How are you today?
We're doing really well, and we appreciate you joining us. And you know, before we kind of delve into the Western Conference and possible moves that teams may make, Jerome McGinley and Brendan Morrow both dealt this week, and maybe we'll start off first with Jerome McGinley. If I'm putting the timeline together correctly, I believe that you were part of the front office that drafted Jerome McGinley in Dallas and then were, of course, his general manager in Calgary. Maybe you can confirm that, and if so, maybe talk about just Jerome McGinley, the player and the person, and your experiences with him.
Well, yeah, that is accurate, and we drafted him in 1995, and then we traded him to Calgary for the for Joe Nieuwendyk. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll try to be quick on this story because I think it tells you a little bit about Jerome McGinley. I think it'll tell you a lot about Jerome McGinley. you know, we had traded him, and he was at the World Junior Camp, and Marcel Como was coaching the team, and they were out in New Brunswick. And it happened late, and you know how the cuts go with the World Junior team early in the morning. So I phoned Marcel to try to give him a heads up. I didn't want him to turn on the TV. So he calls Jerome's room. So Jerome comes in, and, you know, he goes, first thing, Jerome, you're not getting cut. You're on our team. So Jerome's like, whew. He, you know, no airs about him. So he sits him down. He goes, I just wanted to let you know before you heard it, you've been traded to Calgary. Wow. And Marcel says he's sitting on the chair and he's kind of looking down. He's got his head and he looks. He goes, why would Kamloops trade me to Calgary? he never had any thought about the NHL at that point in time. He couldn't. And Marcel, no. Sorry, I didn't mean. You know, you're traded to the Calgary Flames. Anyway, you know, I mean, that was Jerome. First of all, no pretensions to him. No airs about him. I mean, here he is coming in. He's the best player at that tournament. He was the best player in that camp. And he's thinking, oh, maybe I'm getting cut. You know, he's thinking about, what, you know, maybe I'm traded in the Western Hockey League. And, you know, I've said this often about players like Mike Modano, who I've known since they were 17 years old. Mm-hmm. Jerome Iginla, the same age. They're great players. They're even better people. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. It'll be very interesting for me to go to a Calgary Flames game and look down and not see number 12 out there. And I think it'll be very weird for a lot of Calgary Flames fans as well, because he was not only a great player on the ice, he was an iconic figure in the community. And, you know, I think that it's interesting because I think that everybody in Calgary is really rooting for him to win a Stanley Cup, much like Raymond Bourque when he left Boston.
Craig, we wanted to ask you about another captain, one captain to another. You were part of the Dallas, for those that don't know, you were part of the Dallas front office that drafted Brendan Morrow, and he obviously was traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins earlier this week. Can you talk about Brendan Morrow as a person and also as a leader, really as one of the great hockey player leaders in today's game?
Yeah, well, you know, for me, Brendan is that player that, you know, you want players that are dependable and reliable and consistent, and that to me is Brendan. And, you know, you hear this often, you know, who's all in? You know, you look around the dressing room and players want to know, okay, they want to look across and they want to, that guy's in, and the best teams have everybody in. You never have to worry about that with Brendan Morrow. The thing about Brendan that was always interesting to me is he could play any style of game with any type of player. You want to play a grinding, physical, rugged game? Brendan was right up to that task. You want to play a game where it becomes a quick pace game, skill, Brendan could play that game. He was comfortable playing in any situation, in any type of game. And Brendan, like Jerome, there wasn't a lot, this type of loud, boisterous personality. But when they got on the ice, there was only one thing that mattered, was winning. And, you know, I think back to Brendan's rookie year. He came up to our team in Dallas in November of 1999. We were really we weren't struggling, but we needed a jolt, and Brendan gave it to us. Anyway, we get to the conference finals. He breaks his foot in game one. He's at the top of his bone. So he's out for the playoffs. So we miss game two. Game three, we get badly outplayed in Denver. I mean, Eddie Belfour keeps it to 2-0 just with sheer brilliance. That being said, now between game three and game four, Brendan Morrow's out skating before practice, and we're like, what's going on here? Here's what he was doing. He'd had his foot wrapped, and to protect it, he knew he couldn't do any more damage. He was wearing a skate that was a size and a half bigger to protect the foot, and he wanted to see how he could hold up with it. Anyway, he jumped in the lineup for game four and never missed another game. If you want to know what Brendan Morrow's about, there's just one little example.
Those are two great stories. We're joined by Craig Button of TSN. We're now going to talk about breaking down the Western Conference in terms of trades possibilities, but those were two really interesting stories. Craig, the Blackhawks played last night against the Anaheim Ducks. The Ducks prevailed and actually swept the season series, but the Hawks have really been the most dominant team, you know, in hockey all year. Do you see them making a move at all at the deadline to maybe shore up the defense, maybe the last pairing on their back end, or maybe a face-off kind of guy on the third or fourth line, or do you see them just going forward with the group they got?
You know, I think you've nailed the areas that I think they would ideally like to upgrade. You know, another centerman would be nice. I think that David Boland could fit into if they had to push him down to a third line checking role. I think he could do that. You know, it's interesting for me that I think Patrick Sharp is very versatile, and I think you can swing him around. So I think that they're looking for a significant upgrade somewhere in their forward group, whether it be that center you're talking about. I think with Patrick Sharp's flexibility, you know, that might give them the opportunity to jump in on a different type of winger, a bigger, stronger winger, a scoring winger, that type of a guy, and move forward from there. Everybody knows, Joel Quenneville knows this, Stan Bowman knows this, is that deep in the playoffs to win the Stanley Cup, you need depth. And I think on their blue line, I think that that's ideally where they would like to add it and really strengthen their group. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, who they add, because I have no question that they will add somebody. Because the other part of this, too, is that everybody's watched what Pittsburgh's done. So that's Boston that's watching what Pittsburgh's done. But the teams in the West, Anaheim and Chicago, they're saying, okay, what do we got to do to get out of our conference, and then what do we have to do to beat Pittsburgh and or Boston? And so you're trying to make moves based on that type of projection to play and beat those teams. So we all know what Pittsburgh's done, so they set the bar pretty high.
Craig, you just mentioned the Anaheim Ducks, and that's who I wanted to ask you about. They've obviously enjoyed a lot of success this year, beating the Chicago Blackhawks last night. They're in second place in the Western Conference. Do you think a puck-moving, mobile skating defenseman on the back end is their biggest need going into the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, I really like their defense. I think that Bob Murray has done an excellent job on the fly retooling that blue line. And, you know, it wasn't very long ago that they had two of the very best in the last 20 years in Scott Niedermayer and Chris Pronger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Cam Fowler, I think that he's going to need to get his level of play up. But the Sheldon Souré signing, the Brian Allen signing, the trade for Lucas Spezza in the Chris Pronger deal, and then the signing of Brian Allen, I think they have a really good, strong defense. I think they have a defense that's big. I think they have a defense that can skate. And I think they have a defense that's very comfortable playing in a skilled game or a physical game. And I think that's what you need from your blue line. I'm not so sure that they need to add a defenseman per se, a puck moving, because I think they do a pretty good job of getting the puck moving forward to those good forwards. I think that if anything, if I was looking at the Anaheim Ducks, if I had to prioritize one area, I would say to try to get some real heavy grit on their third and fourth lines. You know, when you think back to when they won the Cup with Niedermayer, Paulsen, and Moan, I mean, that was a line that could skate and really mm-hmm. wore down opponents. And if they could get that type of a player into that group, I think that would take some of the pressure off of Koivu and Solani and really give them another edge in those tight games where you keep momentum and you don't lose territorial advantage, where you're pinned in and your defensemen get worn down, where they can do that to the other teams.
You know, Craig, if the Canucks don't deal Luongo to satisfy their need for secondary scoring, what asset do you see them using?
You know, it's interesting. I don't think they're going to be able to personally, I don't think they're going to be able to trade Rivero Luongo for really anything significant because of his contract. And the other thing is Roberto has the no-move clause, mm-hmm. so he decides if and where he goes. You know, there's been a lot of talk about would they trade Corey Schneider. I don't think they trade Corey Schneider at this point in time. I think that there's some players out there that could potentially help them. I mean, they got to determine how quickly Ryan Kesler will be back in the lineup and up and running. Because, I mean, the Canucks are going to be in the playoffs. I mean, it looks like they're going to have home ice in the first round of the playoffs. It looks like the top two seeds are settled with Chicago and Anaheim. So, you know, they're going to have to try to figure out, you know, when they get to that second round, you know, I mean, not getting ahead of yourself, what do they need? And I think that, you know, there's a lot of talk about players like Derek Roy, and, you know, he's got some playoff experience. He can score. I think that third-line guy, that guy that can slip into the second line in Kessler's absence is something that they could look for. But I don't think that Derek Roy is going to cost you. I shouldn't say cost you, but I don't think Roberto Luongo becomes part of that deal. I think mm-hmm. that's a different type of deal with a potential unrestricted free agent.
We're joined by Craig Button of TSN. He'll be part of the Trade Center coverage on this Wednesday, starting at, I think, 7 a.m., of course, on television, and 6 a.m. here on TSN 1290. You know, Craig, we looked at the Eastern Conference in our first hour, and it's very top-heavy, you know, with Pittsburgh and Boston, kind of as you mentioned, and maybe the next best might be Montreal. But in the West, it's a different story. You know, you could say the fifth or sixth seed could have a better chance of making a run than the second or third seed, whatever it may be. How hard is it as a general manager, you know, as you've been, of course, in the past, how hard is it to determine whether you should, you know, go for it, whether you should stand pat, or whether you should, you know, sell some of your assets?
Well, you know, that always is what it comes down to, and it is difficult. I know in 1998 when I was in Dallas, we won the President's Trophy. We felt strong about our team. Joe Nieuwendyk went out in the first game of the playoffs against San Jose, and we got to the conference finals, but fell short against the Detroit Red Wings. That being said, the next year we're in position. We like our team. We're well on the way to winning our second consecutive President's Trophy. And we really sat down and said, we like our team. We're not doing anything. Well, that's great to say that, and we did feel that. But when the trade deadline concluded and Dale Hunter was in Colorado and Wendell Clark was in Detroit, you know, and you're looking, those are your real competitors. Did we do enough? And you question yourself. So I think it's always, we ended up winning, which is nice, but at that moment in time, you really want to give your team and the players every opportunity for the best chance at the Stanley Cup. And so I think that leading into it, after it, you don't know if you've done the right thing. In that case, it was, but you question yourself. And I really believe that the biggest thing you better be is realistic. You got to add players into your group. You got to integrate them into your team. You got to be able to understand how it's going to affect the dynamics of your team and get up and running, so to speak, when you get to the playoffs. So all those things come in. I really believe that teams that are a little bit further back are the ones that might be looking to be a little bit bolder. And I give you no better recent example than the LA Kings last year. Mm-hmm. They weren't sure about getting to the playoffs, and they said, we got to make the playoffs here. We got to really push and everything. And they made a very bold move in trading for Jeff Carter. And I think that because of where their position was, that's what propelled them. Other teams at the top end, I think they're looking for that depth. Pittsburgh excluded right now, their unique situation. But I think it's those teams that are probably in the 5, 6, 7 to 9, 10 range that are really looking to do something significant with assets, whether they be a first-round draft pick or a top or really good prospect in that regard.
Craig, we were talking about the Calgary Flames earlier, and a lot of hockey fans are expecting, you know, the fire sale to be on here now that Iggy's been moved. Do you think the fire sale is on? Do you see guys like Mike Camilleri and Jay Bouwmeester getting traded, or is everyone, you know, overhyping this a little bit?
Well, I'll tell you this. When you begin by trading the face of your franchise, the captain of your team, future Hall of Famer in Jerome McGinley, what it signals to the rest of the league is that you're prepared to listen to anything and everything. I know one thing about Jay Feaster. He's fielding calls from everybody. And he's fielding calls on Bouwmeester, Camilleri, Glenn Cross, Kiprusoff, Giordano. Anybody on that team that teams think could help them, he's fielding calls on them. So it's going to be a very interesting 5 days leading up to the trade deadline. But I would have to think that with the Flames making this move for Jerome Iginla, that they're open to lots of possibilities. Not just one possibility or two, to lots of possibilities. And if teams are willing to step up and make good offers, I think you're going to see the Flames move other players. I don't think you're going to see a complete jettison of the roster, because I don't think he can do that. But either Jay Bouwmeester moves, or Mark Giordano moves, or Mike Camilleri moves, or Curtis Glencross moves. And, you know, there's other guys there, too. Does Lee Stepniak move? I mean, he's a depth guy, a winger. I mean, I was just talking about a type of guy that can skate, got some weight, that might fit into the right type of group. I think Curtis Glencross can skate. He's got a rugged quality to him. Does he move? And I think teams are definitely zeroed in on those types of players.
You know, with San Jose being a veteran squad, do they almost have to go for it this year?
Well, they can go for it. I don't think they have any chance.
Neither do we.
I mean, yeah, so, I mean, go for it. I mean, that's the part of the reality, okay? That's the part of the reality of where San Jose is. And I don't think San Jose's problem has been with Joe Thornton or Antti Niemi or Danny Boyle or Patrick Marleau. I think it's been the supporting cast. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's very good. I don't think when you get to defensemen 4, 5, and 6 and the forwards 8 through 12, that it's a very good team, even 7 to 12 in the forward group. I don't think it's a very good group. And I think what you see there is that when Thornton and Marleau and all those guys are doing their thing, and I think they've been very good this season, that they have success. But when other teams are able to keep them off the scoreboard and keep them in check, nobody else is stepping up. And quite frankly, I mean, they can do whatever they want. They can try to go for it, but I don't think they're going anywhere.
Final question, Craig. You know, when people are watching the coverage on TV or listening on the radio, sometimes they try and visualize what's exactly happening inside an NHL front office. are management and the player personnel staff, are they all in a war room with a number of phones kind of going at the same time, or is the GM on his own, or how does it exactly work?
In today's NHL, and I'm not going to say today's, I mean, for the last decade, 15 years, I mean, you're together. I mean, you need everybody together in the same room. The manager has done a lot of work, fielding calls, understanding what's real, what potentially could move along and what really isn't real. But out of that comes different scenarios that play out, and you got to be able to respond to them quickly. And you don't want to be having to phone your player personnel guy, your scouting group. You want to know right there, okay, what's your thoughts here? We have this choice or that choice. You know, everybody's ranking their players, but you know, you're starting to get to a thing. Is this enough for us to trade this guy? Is this too much to trade for this guy? And I think that everybody's in a cluster. Everybody's together, and you take those calls as a manager, and you're going back and forth. But you need the immediacy of all the people in your hockey group being there. You know, you need your in most cases you need your president there. You need quick access to the ownership if there's something bigger, to understand what the financial implications are. But this is a all hands on deck operation, and I would be very surprised to hear if any team in the NHL does it any differently than that.
Craig Button of TSN, one of our absolute favorites. Thank you so much for joining us this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Always my pleasure, gentlemen, and have a good Saturday and a happy Easter.
You too, Craig.
You too, Craig. Thanks a lot.
Really appreciate it. Yeah. We've gone through every single team in the NHL so far but one. That, of course, is the Winnipeg Jets. When we come back, we're going to jump into the Winnipeg Jets trade talk, and we're going to talk to Chip Alexander of the News and Observer about today's matchup. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Four seconds to go, kind of, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Richard Pollock joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, Tim Debenham, and Michael Remus. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. I got a little bit off track there because Tom Green was at the Free Press Cafe yesterday.
And, was he?
Yeah, he's in town. That's trouble. He's coming in town, of course, to perform at Rumors.
Is that this weekend or next weekend?
I believe it's this weekend.
Okay.
But I want to check and
I
make
it was
sure.
Next weekend.
It might be next weekend, actually. Yeah. I'll double check that. But what we're going to do, guy, we were going to talk about the Jets playoff trade deadline possibilities. Of course, we've broken down all other 29 teams. We're going to focus on the Winnipeg Jets in depth. We're going to push that back to the 10:30 to 10:30 for the final two segments. We're going to break down what the Jets maybe should do, need to do, ought to do. We want to. What we're going to do quickly here is ask for your input. Tweet at Illegal Curve. Tell us what you think the Jets should do. Who they should trade for. Should they stand pat? What do you think? We're going to read your tweets over the course of the final two segments of the show. And Dave, you have a note in terms of roster lineups across the National Hockey League.
Yeah, the Pittsburgh is that Jerome McGinley will be in the lineup for the Pens, which is good news for Jets fans who want to see the Islanders, who are hot right now, lose today. So Iggy will be in the lineup. He met a crazy media circus in Pittsburgh. And just make sure you're reading IllegalCurve.com for all your latest Jets and hockey news.
And there's a lot of questions in terms of what the Jets should do. You know, Hainsey, Bermistrov, Antropov, What do they need? They need a center. They need a scoring right winger. Do they need a stay-at-home D? Do they need more draft picks? There's a lot of questions. We're first gonna talk to Chip Alexander after the break about Carolina. They've been streaking in the wrong direction, of course, over the past couple of weeks, and they are in Winnipeg to play the Jets here at 2 o'clock. Of course, this is Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day. Hustler and Lawless are gonna join you at the top of the hour, and then at 1 o'clock, Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show live from Boston Pizza City Place. When we come back, Chip Alexander of the News and Observer. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuka of IllegalCurve.com, Tim Debenham, and Michael Remus. This is the final Saturday of March, if you can believe it. And this segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a home is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. This is not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 204-230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline by Chip Alexander of the News and Observer with the Hurricanes in town today at 2 o'clock. No better person to talk about the Canes with than Chip. Chip, how are you this morning?
Hey, I'm doing fine.
Thanks for joining us, Chip. And, you know, the Hurricanes, of course, have been streaking in the wrong direction, as we mentioned last segment, and 2-7-1 in their last 10 games. You know, what do you think's been the biggest reason for that play, that poor play?
Well, for one reason, you know, for a long time this season, they had very good 5-on-5 play and were getting a lot of offensive production out of it, and that slowed down over the last 5 or 6 games and having a hard time scoring goals, whether 5-on-5 or the power play. They have gotten a couple of power play goals here the last few games, so they're hoping that that's moving in the right direction, but it just seems like every little breakdown or every little mistake has been, you know, had a lot of very dire consequences for them. I know in the game against Winnipeg, the last game, a couple of breakdowns by a defenseman, Evander Kane, you know, breaks free and winds up being a couple of goals. You know, missed a defensive assignment and winds up being a goal. I know those are the things that usually decide hockey games, but it just seems like the smallest mistakes are having big consequences.
Chip, we have to ask you about the goaltending because Cam Ward's been out for several weeks now, and I don't think that it's a coincidence that the Canes have been struggling. Cam Ward is still out, but I believe that Dan Ellis is on the road trip in Winnipeg. So I guess a two-part question. Do you think the Canes are good enough defensively to survive without Cam Ward? And I guess the second part of that question, do you know who's going to start for the Canes tonight? And is it possible that Dan Ellis gets back into the lineup?
Well, I would think that Justin Peters will be back into today. And, you know, I have a feeling that Dan Ellis may be the backup. Cut his leg. It wasn't a very serious cut. It did require some stitches, but he has been out for a while. And I think they would probably like to get Justin back into today's game. And I know that he made a couple of mistakes in the game the other night in Toronto that were, you know, that wound up being goals and were costly. And that's, I think, more so than the goaltending, though, today is really going to be, for me, the most interesting part from the Hurricanes' perspective is their mindset for this game, you know. They did a lot of good things in the game in Toronto and wound up losing the game, but yet it was a very hard defeat. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they start off this game today. But Kirk Muller's been, with his goaltenders, has always been a kind of guy that keeps things close to the vest and always likes to say he's going to make up his decision the day of the game. So it's going to be interesting to see who is in net today. But if I had to say, I would think it'd be Justin Peters.
You know, Jim, that springboards into my question is, how would you rate Kirk Muller's work so far with the team?
Well, I think, you know, coming in last year, I think, you know, taking over Paul Maurice, being fired, a tough situation. He hadn't been a head coach very long, and that was in the American League, you know, just for a few games. So it was all new to him being a head coach, running a team. He had to hire, you know, John McClain as an assistant coach, a lot of things, new systems. And he was really looking forward to having this season as a normal season, obviously. He knew the lockout situation and the CBA situation that was in front of him and the possibilities there. And sure enough, it turned out for the worst for the league in terms of having the fall wiped out, training camp, all of that. So once again, Muller took the team on the fly into the season. So he hasn't really had a normal season yet with the Hurricanes. But, you know, he's known as a guy who communicates well with the players. I think he's tried to keep their spirits up through this stretch, and you're right. You know, you point back to Cam Ward. I mean, when they lost Ward, they knew it was going to be tough, especially when you're looking at the injury he had to his knee and you knew he was likely out all the way through the end of the regular season. You knew that it was up to Dan Ellis and Justin Peters to get the job done. But then again, when you lose your number one goaltender, I mean, that's sometimes that's hard for a team to absorb, and I think it's been hard for the Hurricanes.
We're joined by Chip Alexander of the News and Observer talking about the Carolina Hurricanes, who are in town, of course, to face the Winnipeg Jets, which can be heard live on TSN 1290 at 2 p.m. Brian Munns with the call. Chip, Juuse Jokinen was placed on waivers this week. Was that a surprise for hockey fans in the Carolina area and for his teammates?
I think it came as a surprise for the fans. I think it probably did for some of his teammates as well. Juuse has not had the kind of season that he hoped for, obviously, that the team had hoped for in terms of his production. He has struggled at times. I think, on the heels of the contract extension that they gave to Alex Semin, the 5 years, $35 million, they were looking to try to clear some salary for next year, and Juuse Jokinen is due to make $3 million next year. So I think all of that added up in terms of the decision to put him on waivers. But at the same time, he did clear waivers, is with the team, and I would not be surprised to see him in the lineup today, perhaps. And hopefully, I'm sure they're hoping that something like that will be a shock to his system and he'll come out and play, give them the kind of production they've been hoping for.
Chip, you just mentioned Alexander Semin, and as you know, he was a pending unrestricted free agent, and he just signed the big 5-year, $35 million contract. Did that come out of left field for you and fans in Carolina, or were all indications that Semin was going to sign a new contract with Carolina?
No, I think it did come out of left field a little bit. I know in talking with Jim Rutherford a few weeks ago, I posed the question to him, the general manager, how are things gone with Semin? I knew they were pleased with the production they've gotten out of him and the way things have gone. But in terms of, will you be looking to re-sign him? When would you do that? And he said that, they liked everything they'd seen out of Semin and that, yes, they would, they did want to re-sign him. But, I got the impression then that it might be, after the season ended and before free agency. But to get 5 years, I thought that was a little bit of a surprise. I thought maybe that they might come to some kind of an agreement, maybe on something like more of a 3-year contract. But this is a long-term commitment from the team to him and for him to the team. And it certainly speaks a lot to the way he has come in, to this team from one of their top rivals in the division and really fit in well with the organization.
So, Chip, with the trade deadline upcoming, are the Canes buyers or are they sellers?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. Today's game might go a long way towards that, and certainly to finish this trip in Montreal and see where they stand. If they're sitting there with a few more losses on their record, that may alter the way that they look at things, and obviously they'll have to look at the standings. And even if they trail, say, Winnipeg by 6 or 8 points in the division, they still could be, sitting there looking at eighth place and still think that they could make a run at the eighth spot in the East. So they've said all along their top priority is to find a big, rugged, stay-at-home defenseman, which obviously a lot of other teams are looking for the same. So for now, that's their stance. But if you talk to me maybe on Tuesday, that may change.
It's amazing how quickly things will change. Last question, Chip. The Staal brothers, of course, Jordan and Eric, are playing on the Hurricanes. Their brother Mark had a serious eye injury, and the Staal brothers have decided to wear visors. How hard were the brothers to convince to put on those visors, and how important do you think that is, for players around the league to see two prominent guys put those visors on?
Well, I'm hoping it's very important. For what it's worth, I've been very much in support of mandatory visors. And certainly within the Hurricanes organization, you've had some people like Jason Karmanis, who had an eye injury, and former coach Paul Maurice had an eye injury. Mm-hmm. Ron Francis was very lucky not to have had an eye put out when he was a young player and was one of the first to wear visors. So certainly with Mark Staal's injury, that got their attention. And they had been very reluctant to put on visors. And I don't know, maybe Mama Staal won that one back in Thunder Bay. And they all decided they're going to wear them. Jared Staal is with the Charlotte Checkers, and obviously in the AHL, they're mandatory. So for now, all four Staal brothers will be wearing visors. And from my perspective, that's a good thing.
Mom usually knows best. Chip Alexander of the News and Observer, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Chip, enjoy the game. Two segments to go, guys, and we've been getting some Twitter reaction as to what the Jets should be doing. Well, we're going to give you our opinion and then read some of your opinion as we close in on H&L at 11 o'clock on Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Only two more segments here on Saturday, March 30th. This beautiful morning, Winnipeg, Manitoba. Of course, we're closing in the playoffs. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, Tim Debenham, and Michael Remus. Tim Debenham, easy for me to say. This segment's brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus in the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing proper protective equipment is a must. A proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus in the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protection. In two short appointments, you can get your own custom-fitted mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Guys, we are now at the Winnipeg Jets, 29 teams down and one to go. This one team, of course, is a team that we cover in depth, and we're going to be going over their trade deadline needs and what they possibly could do over the final two segments. If you want to get in on this conversation, tweet at Illegal Curve to give us your opinion on what the Jets ought to do at the deadline. Ezzy, we talked about Ron Hainsey last week, you know, what they should do, and we broke that down and obviously talked about Burmistrov. But overall, I mean, the Jets are now kind of have a strength. Even with the games in hand that the teams in their division have, they kind of have a stranglehold on third place in the conference, and of course first place in the division. What do you think the Jets will do with the trade deadline coming up on Wednesday?
It's a really good question, and it's good that we kept it until the last half an hour of the show. But the Jets, you mentioned that the Jets have a stranglehold, and they have a really good chance at making the playoffs now with 14 games left. You know, there's probably a 3/4% chance around there that the Jets are going to make the playoffs. If they don't finish third, they have a good chance at getting one of the bottom two spots. And, you know, everyone knows that Ron Hainsey's a UFA and Kyle Wellwood's a UFA and Antropov is UFA. And as far as Antropov goes, you know, I'll start off with him. I think that if you can get a draft pick for him, you get rid of him. I think Antropov has been one of our worst forwards. And I've said numerous times on this show, I thought he shouldn't even be in the lineup and he might be a candidate for the press box. But, you know, Claude Demel has stuck with him and kept him in the lineup. And his offensive performance, except for a few games this year, has been pretty poor. So I think if you have a chance, get rid of him in that contract. As far as Ron Hainsey goes, I still am of the believer that you keep him. And Richie, I know that if you can get, you know, a couple of draft picks for him, that's fine. But I still think that you keep him because of the way he's played defensively. He hasn't gotten any goals this year. But I think that, you know, Ron Hainsey is a guy that you need for the playoffs, unless you're going to get, I would say, a clean, you know, second round pick, meaning that you don't have to give up another pick to a team to take his salary. I think you hang on to Hainsey. I know Enstrom's back, but I think that, you know, if you look at the lineup without Mark Stewart in the lineup, without Zach Redmond in the lineup, the Jets struggle big time. As far as, you know, what moves they should make, I think if they can get a defenseman, then that is something that I think is the biggest need for Chevy. And I know that there are holes, you know, secondary scoring. Olli Jokinen has struggled all year. And, you know, if they could get a guy like a Drew Stafford or a Kopetsky who's had a lot of success against the Jets, I think you would be, you know, well-served to do that. But I think, you know, as far as, you know, unloading guys, I think that you only do it if the package that you get is really you know, enticing. And I think, you know, Ron Hainsey is a guy that everyone's talked about for a long time. And I think a team like, you know, Gary Lawless mentioned this on Lawless and Order on TSN Jets, the Boston Bruins covet a guy like Hainsey. And I think that if the Bruins are willing to give you, you know, a draft pick, and you think that that's, you know, like a Johnny Oduya for a second rounder this year and next year, you know, that might be enough for Chevy to do it, but I still think they need him in the lineup right now.
We've kind of went over every team in terms of their pending UFAs, pending RFAs, and cap space. So let's quickly go through the Jets. Pending UFAs are the aforementioned Nick Antropov, Kyle Wellwood, Antti Miettinen, Ron Hainsey, Grant Klitsam, Derek Meach, and Al Montoya. Lots of free agent signings, of course. The pending RFAs are the more significant ones. Blake Wheeler, Brian Little, Alex Burmistrov, Patrice Cormier, Eric Tangrady, Anthony Peluso, and then Zach Bogosian, of course, is a big one on the back end with the injured Zach Redmond, Paul Postma, and Artur Skulda as the RFAs. So there's certainly going to be some contracts to sign coming up this offseason, if not before that. But cap space is not an issue in terms of the Jets can take on a lot of money at the deadline if they so choose. David, same question I asked Ezra. What do you think the Jets do coming up on the deadline?
You know, Richard, great question. The truth is we will really see what this team is made of because, you know, you guys mentioned that the Jets have a likely stranglehold, but it's not a definite stranglehold on the third spot in the East right now. And they've played Carolina today, they play the Rangers on Monday, and they play the Islanders on Tuesday.
Three
games before the deadline to really see what GM Kevin Cheveldayoff and the rest of his team are going to do, because really they're kind of in a tough position. Mm-hmm, you know, what do you do? What kind of message do you send your fan base if you're going to trade away a Hainsey who's, look, you can say whatever you want about Ron Hainsey. He's not putting the puck in the net, and that's fine. But at the same time, he's eating up huge minutes. He's blocking shots, and he's being asked to take on a role. He had been asked until, you know, now that Enstrom's back, to take on a role that wasn't his natural fit. And so, you know, you have Hainsey playing above his position. And so, you know, yeah, you could trade him, but who's going to fill in for Ron Hainsey?
And we talk about, you know, money issues in terms of what the Jets can recoup. Now, the Jets right now are currently lined up to play Toronto in the first round. Toronto's certainly a beatable team, especially when the Jets have home ice advantage. So the question is, what is the value? If Ron Hainsey nets you, say, what Doug Murray did in 2 second round picks, what is the value to organization? In terms of monetarily speaking, in terms of those second-round picks, as compared to, say, a second-round playoff run where you play 6 home playoff games and might net $10 to $12 million, which can be used to spend in free agency if you so choose, or in a variety of other ways. So there's components that go far beyond just the actual NHL roster. Now, Dave, of course, we've been getting some feedback on Twitter in terms of what to do. We're going to get to that next segment, so if you want to get in on that, add a legal curve to tell us what you think the Jets should do in with the trade deadline upcoming. And, of course, trade deadline coverage can be heard on TSN 1290 starting at 6 a.m. with the big show on Wednesday, April 3rd, going all the way through until NHL midweek at 8 p.m. David?
I mean, ultimately what this team needs is secondary scoring, and everybody knows that. They have only 88 goals for. They have 103 against. So, I mean, their goal differential isn't great. It's the worst of all the playoff teams right now. And they haven't had a lot of scoring. I mean, their offense of late, I think Wheeler, Little, Kane, and Ladd have 2 goals in their last 5 games. And it's amazing because the Jets have been winning. Yep. So it's not like the Jets are losing those games. They're still winning, but they're not getting the production from the big lines.
I think we're pretty certain that there are not going to be any rentals coming into town. In terms of the Jets aren't going to go out for a guy like Jaromir Jagr and bring him in for a stretch drive. At least I don't think. I think more likely a guy like we mentioned, you know, a Drew Stafford type, or a player who's under contract, fairly reasonable terms, who can help the team in the long haul. I don't think this is going to be mortgaging picks, you know, for roster players who have expiring contracts, unless it's expiring contract for expiring contract. Ezzy?
Drew Stafford, you've mentioned before, and I think he's a good fit, and he's a guy that I think would benefit from a change of scenario. Another guy, too, that's interesting, and, you know, we talk about Ron Hainsey and, you know, what a team would need to give us to the Jets. Sorry, I should say. I'm talking as if I'm in Chevy's front office here. Another guy that's interesting to me that scored a goal last night that I've always really liked is Curtis Glencross. And I think you'd probably have to give up a lot. I believe, Richie, maybe you can check that for me. I think Glencross has got 1 year left on his contract, if not 2 years. He's not a pending free agent.
He's got 2 years left year with a no-movement clause at $2.55 a year.
Yeah, I think he's a very nice value forward, and he's a guy that you'd have under contract for 2 more years. Glencross can kill penalties. He's a fast skater. He's got a good wrist shot down the wing. You know, the Jets have 2 second-rounders and 2 third-rounders. You know, you'd have to make the decision, you know, do we give up one of our second-rounders that we've acquired maybe from Chicago to go after Curtis Glencross? I don't think you'd get him just for a second rounder. You'd have to probably give a roster player as well. But he's a guy that I would think would be a nice fit in Winnipeg.
I love Curtis Glencross, but what he costs to get based on the assets the Jets have would be difficult, Desi. But that contract's great value, $2.55 million for this year and the next 2, Dave?
Well, ultimately, I think what Kevin Cheveldayoff and his company are going to do is they're just going to stand pat. I really think so. I think that if you look at it from his point of view, he's in a long-term build mode with this team. So what is he thinking? He's thinking to himself, well, you know what? We're in the third spot right now. Mm-hmm. We've maintained this third spot. We know that we likely only have to be about .500 hockey for the rest of the way to maintain that. he can probably do that. If we broke down the schedule a couple of weeks ago, and so the likelihood of this team being able to play 500 hockey and get into the playoffs, likely in the third seed, is fairly high. So you think to yourself, why would I trade away something that I don't need to? Why would I mortgage the future? Because to use Coach Noel's, you know, one of his favorite phrases, this team is still a ways away from being a Stanley Cup contender.
The one point there would be, you know, if you're Winnipeg and you say, okay, we're the third seed, it very well may happen that Montreal is the second seed and Pittsburgh and Boston, the two, arguably, I'm not so sure arguably, I think they are the two best teams in the conference, are at 1-4. So if everything maps out, you know, based on the favorites winning, you get Montreal in the second round if you are victorious in the first round. Montreal is, to me, a far more beatable team than Pittsburgh and Boston. Not that Montreal isn't dangerous, but then you think to yourself, well, if you can add a player or two who gives you a shot at possibly making it to the conference finals, that makes it more complicated, does it not?
Yeah, and on paper, the Jets you'd think would match up well against Montreal, but if you look at dating back to last year, the Jets have struggled big time against the Habs. They've got the Habs coming up on the road, Dave, later this week, but you know they've had success against the Flyers, and they've played the Bruins pretty well. They've beaten the Hurricanes twice this year. It's really tough if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff to make any moves when you've gotten to this point so far with the players that you've gotten. I mean, Ron Hainsey, yes, he makes $4 million, $4.5 million a year, but he's given you that shutdown role. And, yeah, sure, you know, he's at times struggled, and he doesn't give you that offense, but how do you trade a guy that has got you that far? And you could really go somewhere in the playoffs with the defense they've got. And I think, you know, moving forward, you know, we talked about Jacob Trouba on the NHL Midweek Show on Wednesday. But, you know, I look at the defense, and even with Trouba, if he comes in next year or the year after, I still think you've got big-time holes on defense. You know, Derek Meech has done an admirable job coming in for the Jets, but Grant Klitsam has struggled at times. Paul Postma hasn't adapted to the NHL game like they'd like. So you still need a shutdown guy, a veteran guy on defense. And maybe if you have that opportunity to make that move, you do that in the next few days.
And there's nothing saying, Yezzy, that you trade Ron Hainsey for picks, for example, and then as part of another deal, acquire a defenseman to maybe fill that slot. They kind of did that last year with Odia the Klitsam. That was downgrade in terms of talent, but it is possible to do that, and I think that needs to be accounted for as well. So there are many options, and he does have picks, Kevin Cheveldayoff, and there's nothing saying you can't trade draft picks for younger players who you have control of for a long period of time. There are many options. Standing pat is one of them, and it seems to be the prevailing opinion for the most part that he will stand pat. But we want to hear what the fans, of course, have to think. We're going to read your opinion after the break, and we're going to hash out a little bit more of our own opinions heading into the final segment of the Legal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290. One final segment of the Legal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290 on this Saturday morning. Joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of LegalCurve.com, Tim Debenham, and Michael Remus. I'm Richard Pollack, filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, who will be returning on Wednesday.
Hold on, Drew? Who's that? Who is that?
You know, I don't know who that is, actually.
Isn't there a song, Forget Drew?
On that note.
No, we're joking.
That leads well. Speaking of Drew, leads, of course, well into delis. And this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, conveniently located at 1700 Cordon Avenue in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli that's been serving traditional deli food for nearly 30 years. Take it home or eat it there. Bernstein's Deli is your deli destination in South Winnipeg. Check out their website at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Of course, we're going to be going to Bernstein's Deli after the show today.
If you want to talk hockey.
Talk hockey and come have a corned beef sandwich. They've actually told me at Bernstein's Deli that there's a limit on the amount of sliced deli meat that I can take. I actually showed up there with a wheelbarrow and just asked them to fill it up with turkey, corned beef, and brisket, and they told me that I was running them out of business. But Bernstein's Deli is great. If you have an opportunity to go for lunch, you're going to love it. Best deli food in the city.
I mean, no, that's the only running you've been doing lately.
Yeah.
Although, according to Ezzy, last week he was crawling because it's so close to his place.
I go for walks. You know what I actually have been doing lately? I've been going for, like, mall walking. So I go to Polo Park and...
He power walks with the seniors.
I power walk with the seniors. I, you know, stop by, you know, all the stores, Lululemon and Victoria's Secret, I got to admit. So
before we replace you with with one of our listeners, we might as well get our listeners' point of view on what the Jets should do with the trade deadline. David, this is tweeted to us at our Legal Curve account on Twitter.
Yeah, we got a number of good ones. We got Ryan Rankowski saying we should go after Glenn Cross or Stafford, which are two guys who have been talked about. We can afford to give up a Burmy and a D-man. Also, Okpozo would be a nice fit. J.J. Robertson said, what about Martin Hansel in Phoenix? Big, skilled center with a decent contract.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Manitoba Dave. Trade for Holtby. This is a funny one. Trade for Holtby. He apparently can't lose at the MTS Center. Pav can play all the road games, and we'll have at least 41 wins at home.
Yeah, Holtby's 3-0 here this year.
Graham went to the sign Trouba, trade Hainsey mode. And finally, Sean Rafferty said, how about Hainsey in a pick to Detroit for Valtteri Filppula? Good playmaker, could ignite Kane for the rest of the year.
Just got a note here about the Pittsburgh Penguins. Again, as you mentioned earlier in the show, David's going to be playing this afternoon. He's playing, apparently, as the left winger with Evgeny Malkin and James Neal. I don't know if that'll last, but that's where they're starting. At least this is from Mark Masters of TSN. And an interesting note, Paul Martin, who's been way better this year than he was last year, out 6 weeks with a broken bone upper body injury. 6 weeks? Does that make the Pittsburgh Penguins a buyer again on the market? I think it very well might. And, you know, the playoffs are, what, about a month away? I don't know if they'll have an issue with the Penguins in the first round, so you can the Penguins might decide to sit idly by and wait for Martin's return, but it does present some interesting options for Pittsburgh, and who knows what happens. Do they maybe bring back Ryan Whitney? I don't know.
Yeah, started his career there. You know, Pittsburgh Penguins wanted Douglas Murray before Paul Martin mm-hmm. went down. You mentioned he's been playing better. You know, he never really projected as that kind of offensive defenseman like, you know, the Devils thought he was going to be, but he's been a kind of a stabilizing presence. So you'd have to think that if they see a guy that is the right price, they might go after him. Because that you know what that does? That elevates a guy like Simon Dupre to play more minutes. And he's struggled even in the bottom pairing. So, you know, when you go out and you acquire Morrow, Iggy, and Murray, you think you're done. But, you know, Shiro can never, you know, count him out as somebody who's going to acquire someone to make his team better.
Well, what happens there quickly before we get back to the Jets is, you know, you have Letang, obviously he's injured right now, but not the best defensively. Likes to jump into the play a lot. Murray, not the best skater. And Orpik, really solid player, but hasn't played that well lately and not the best skater. And then, you know, Niskanen's obviously coming to his own a bit there. But if Paul Martin's not there and they don't address that, you're suddenly a stacked team with a little bit of a hole on the back end. And Marc-Andre Fleury's confidence has always been somewhat suspect. So it... You never just write it in that they're going to win the cup. You got to always play the games, and it's a tough road to go all the way through the Eastern Conference and, of course, prevail. David?
We have a tweet from Rick Ralph of TSN who says, people shouldn't be drinking early this early. Trade ideas, hashtag, early game today.
Early game today is right. And so we asked you before in the prior segment, you know, what do you think the Jets will do? Now I want to know, what do you think the Jets should do? And Ezzy, I'm going to leave it to you first. If you were Kevin Cheveldayoff, what would you do at the deadline?
Well, I kind of already touched on this when I was talking about what they could do. I think you keep Ron Hainsey, even though he's a pending UFA, because of the role that he plays on the team. I think you move Nikolai Antropov and basically take whatever you can get. I don't think he's going to fetch much, and he's proven that he's a wildly inconsistent forward. Mm-hmm. His best offensive days are behind him. I would try to go after a top six forward, and I would use the draft picks that he has. You know, you've still got your first rounder, you're still going to have a second rounder, but, you know, dangle a second rounder and maybe move someone to acquire scoring. But I could also say do nothing. The Jets are in a terrible division, and, you know, you look at who they have right now and the moves that they've made. You know, I liked the James Wright acquisition earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. Tangrady's offered a kind of a nice grit role on the bottom lines. I don't know if you have to do much, but it would probably be take what you can get for Antropov and keep Hainsey as far as the big UFAs go.
You know, I really think that if Cheveldayoff wants to do anything, he needs to get someone to play with Kane. I mean, and that's easier said than done, but really that's what this team needs. As I suggested earlier, this team doesn't have great secondary scoring, and even their primary scoring right now, the last few games, hasn't been there.
If Kane and Ladd and Wheeler aren't going, they have trouble.
Yeah, really big trouble. And so, and you know, Wheeler's can be streaky and stuff like that, but, like, you know, you don't want to be reliant on a guy who's either in his streak or not in the streak to be providing you the bulk of your scoring. So the Jets really need to do whatever they can to acquire that sort of secondary scoring if they, you know, if it's out there and if the deal can be done for the right price, not mortgaging the future.
Yeah, I think my opinions are fairly in line with you guys. I mean, I trade Ron Hainsey and see what you can get for him. I trade the pending UFAs that they have, really, and see if you can get anything for those guys. I think most of them are replaceable without much of a drop-off. Hainsey will be a drop-off. Stewart comes back. It's not the biggest drop-off in the world. And I think the asset moving forward does provide you with some nice ability to maybe package a couple of those picks for a player, package a couple of those picks for a first rounder. I don't think the Jets should lose sight of the goal. And the ultimate goal is obviously to be a cup contender. And the ultimate goal is to acquire really as many assets as you can. And to me, if you're going to be able to make a run with, I think you can make a run without those players, really. I really do believe that. And if that's the case, take your chances. And you're not going to win the Cup this year anyways. And you can probably still beat a team like Toronto or New Jersey without the players we just talked about as pending UFAs. And you also have to take into account, you know, the possibility of acquiring a player. But if you're acquiring a player, and I think Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to stick to this, you're acquiring a player who has some controlled years in terms of, you know, he's an RFA or, you know, you have control of him and he's not going to be a pending UFA or this year or even next year. So you don't lose sight of the overall vision of the squad, and I certainly think there's a defenseman available that you have some can get some control of. I would look at that, and obviously the scoring. I mean, there's needs everywhere, and that's why I don't think you're going to be mortgaging anything to look at a short-term fix. But it's easier said than done, right? I mean, this isn't in a vacuum, and the Winnipeg Jets have an opportunity that they may not for the next few years to not only get into the playoffs, but be the third seed in the conference and get home ice advantage. Think about next year, guys. You know, Chicago, they're not better than Chicago. St. Louis, they're not better than St. Louis. I mean, you could argue about some of the other teams that they're going to be in the division with, but it's going to be tough sledding against those squads. They are, as much as the travel has been an issue, it really hasn't been that bad in the competition. The Southeast Division could be the worst division in the history of hockey, and I'm not trying to be funny or dramatic about it. It very well could be. This division's awful. And they have a chance to make a run, and they very possibly could get an easy draw in the first round. Easy in, you know, relative terms, as compared to the draw in the Western Conference. I mean, if you look at the Eastern Conference right now, the sixth seed is the Toronto Maple Leafs. You want to know who the sixth seed in the Western Conference is? The Detroit Red Wings. Night and day. So maybe you take your chances here. I'm not sure.
I think it's, you know, I think many fans want to see that Southeast banner hanging from the MTS Center rafters for years to come. So as new fans filter into the building and they don't realize, when were the Jets ever in the Southeast?
It's a good question.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
David Manuka of IllegalCurve.com, one of the best pinch hitters in Illegal Curve history. Give us your cheer or jeer.
Well, my cheer is going to be very local today. It's going to go to Richard Pollack. I want to congratulate Richard on the job he's done as the host, the fill-in host for Drew Mandel. He's done more than an admirable job. He's been fantastic. He's led the show in Drew's absence. And Richard, you've done an excellent job. So my cheer goes to you today.
Thank you. It's very nice.
Wow. It is very nice. I'm not going to cheer you, though. I think you've done a mediocre job, actually. just kidding, Richie. I love you. Can't wait for Drew to get back. I'm going to steal your cheer a little bit, Richie, here. I'm going to cheer Jerome Iginla. Iggy was traded. I know you're really upset. Don't worry. You're going to say something a lot more astute than me. But, you know, Iggy is one of my faves of all time. And, you know, he was traded earlier this week, as everyone knows. And he went up there and he smiled and he said all the right things. And I think, you know, he deserves to go to Pittsburgh and have a chance at a cup. So great career, future Hall of Famer for sure.
So I'll change mine on the fly. I'm going to jeer fans getting mad at players for not, you know, waiving their no trade clauses or no movement clauses. I mean, these were bargained in good faith. You can't hold it against the player if he decides to go to a certain team. That's what he negotiated. Don't hold it against him. I mean, why negotiate a contract then? If you get a no move or no trade, and if you were in Calgary during the past 10 years, and you had a pulse, you got a no trade or no movement clause. But don't hold it against the player if he eventually uses it to his benefit. That does it, guys. 3 hours of our trade deadline preview. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, CGA Association of Manitoba, and Elite Sports Injury Clinic. Of course, our guests today, and they were great, Craig Button of TSN, Kevin Allen of USA Today, and Chip Alexander of the News and Observer. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and Instagram, at Illegal Curve. That finishes our trade deadline preview show. Of course, Wednesday, we're back for NHL Midweek to break down the trade deadline action so we can see if our predictions were true and what exactly happened. Of course, coverage of trade deadline starts at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290 with the big show. 3 more games to go, guys, before the trade deadline, and that starts today, 2 o'clock, against the Carolina Hurricanes. H&L are next from Boston Pizza City Place.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.